On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning October 25th, 2024. Playing the race card. It's an ugly phrase, not least because it diminishingly implies something lightweight, playing, when it's still a deeply serious and divisive matter in American life, no matter how much progress we may think we've made over the past half century or so. And race as a political wedge to employ in fighting a presidential campaign cannot help but carry the dull thud of inevitability. One thuddingly obvious complaint has come once again in this year's contest from black communities that the Democratic Party, Kamala Harris's campaign included, has been taking them for granted. Natural supporters, a core base, or the party's backbone are labels that journalists and headline writers often use, in part because that's how party activists often talk. And on the other side, there's an unavoidable fact about the Republicans' candidate. Since way before he entered presidential politics, when his baleful influence was limited to my city's, New York City's, business and public life, and its self-styled social life, Donald Trump gave off the noxious smell of racism in so much of what he did. His and his father's property business practiced out-and-out racism against black tenants, and he himself notoriously demanded execution for five young men of color who, it turned out, were wrongfully convicted of a terrible assault and rape in the city's Central Park. Only this week, those exonerated men were reported to be suing Trump for his comments about them now, 35 years later, trotted out again during the recent presidential TV debate. But racial politics, and the reporting of them, is never that stark or simple. Yes, Kamala Harris has recently had to beat the drum hard in, for instance, one critical battleground state, Georgia, in the hope of ensuring a powerful black turnout there, in early voting and on November the 5th, one that will help her to seal victory. She concentrated her efforts on the so-called Black Mecca of Atlanta. So we should examine how black communities' own media have been responding to her drum beating. The Atlanta Voice is a paper born in 1966, in the midst of the civil rights movement, and still today announces itself as devoted to, quote, the well-being of Atlanta's African-American community. It reported a detailed list of Georgia's leading black figures who showed up for Harris, including 50 elected officials from all over the state, including Senator Raphael Warnock, plus Bishop Donald Battle, a redolent name for any contest, from the megachurch, Divine Faith Ministries International. Bishop Battle told Harris she was there for a reason, and it was, quote, time for a woman to lead this country. And Stevie Wonder, yes, of course he was there, sang his own happy birthday to the candidate. She was turning 60, positively juvenile in this race. And he even adapted the words of Bob Marley's redemption song a little to make it a special appeal to voters. The Atlanta Voice's report, and this was in the paper's news section, not an opinion column, came to the conclusion that, quote, the message is clear. Black Atlanta, Black Georgia is in full support of Harris. Just how full, though, is a question that must concern the Harris campaign as they engage in what they keep on emphasizing is an extraordinarily close race. One of her highest wattage supporters and surrogates has, of course, been former President Barack Obama, who seemed decidedly worried during the Pennsylvania portion of his supportive tour of battleground states. In between his set-piece rallying speeches, he dropped by more informally at a Harris campaign field office in Pittsburgh and made remarks there, with cameras in attendance, of course, about black men not yet flocking to the cause as he very evidently thought they should be. He now famously attributed this to that other ism at work here, sexism. The way he voiced it was classic Obama. As he saw it, any lower enthusiasm compared with his own run in 2008 seems, I quote, seems to be more pronounced with the brothers, who were, he said, coming up with all kinds of reasons and excuses. The real reason he offered directly addressing those brothers was, you just aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. You may be right, and a sickening pull may be at work from Trump, who has started to revel in numbers that are, though only to a small degree, creeping up for him among black men, especially younger black men. With that peculiarly sardonic snarl of his, even when he's presumably trying to be positive, he told a Nevada crowd, I love black men. I love them. I love them. And if you really believe that, I have a certain London bridge to sell you. We won't find much about Trump wooing black men in the Atlanta Voice, but maybe an outsider's reportorial stance might be useful. Of all papers, the British Daily Telegraph, in the person of a female reporter, it might be worth pointing out, Rosia Sabour, one who happens to share with the Democratic candidate some South Asian lineage, went to Atlanta to gauge the bellwether of black men. Guess what? In the barbershops and the other traditional journalists' hunting grounds, she found black men who supported Harris and some who supported Trump. The theme she found and emphasized was put to her by one not clearly decided black 36-year-old, that is, someone with no direct memories of the civil rights struggle. For men of my age, he told the reporter, it's not about color, it's about dollars and cents. What Trump is trying to do, of course, is to harp on an old fear, blame immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants, for taking people's jobs, what he relishes calling black jobs. And, of course, he insists on it and repeats it, despite the preponderance of economic evidence showing that immigration does not create black unemployment, which is now, we should remember, at its lowest level for decades. But here once more is an overarching problem for the Democrats. Facts and statistics can count for little when opposed by feelings. Not President Obama's kind of feeling, like a feeling of understanding, but the feelings inevitably of fear and blame. For every Republican-leaning black man like former Air Force officer Henry Childs, who has complained to the originally white-owned Atlanta Constitution Journal newspaper that, quote, you walk by construction sites, you go into McDonald's, you look in hotels, blacks used to have those jobs. There is a farm worker like Donnie McCrary who tells that same paper, we have opportunities to do well, and it has nothing to do with immigrants. They never took a job from me or anyone that I know. But it's still hard to avoid the notion that if a younger black man believes his job prospects are threatened by incomers and he's made uncomfortable by the idea of a woman being in charge, then the Harris camp might well lose him to Trump. One pretty sure way to make such a loss happen is to hector the young man, telling him he's wrong and not feeling the right way, to cite President Obama again. And overall, if crude prejudices among men are to be battled, it seems perverse to single out black men. A recent New York Times poll shows that 70% of black men plan to vote for Harris. By comparison, white and Latino men appear way more biased. Of white men, only 35% say they'll vote for her, and 55% of Latinos plan to vote that way. Both still a long way behind the proportion of black men whose support will go to, yes, a woman. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.com.